Welcome to Soundbites, true stories told by local Mainers and nationally recognized storytellers. The themes are always changing and the hosts are from all over the nation, but when you hear the name Soundbites, you're in for a unique storytelling experience. Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. This week's stories were told live at Frontier in Brunswick, where the event's dedicated theme was Undertow. Here's today's host, a teacher, author, and storyteller from Connecticut, Matthew Dix.
So, without any further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce our first storyteller of the evening, Sultana Khan. Ladies and gentlemen.
I think it's only appropriate, having heard this earlier, to shout out my mom, who is here and who drove from Vermont. That's a good mom. I want to just preface my story by saying that I'm going to be talking about depression and suicide. Those are heavy topics, so if those are things that you might not be comfortable with or are maybe triggered by, I would invite you to take the time you need to step outside and just to practice a little bit of self-care. So, a couple of years ago, right after I moved to Portland, I had a really bad night. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and none of the tools that I have accumulated over many, many years of therapy were working for me. I had just moved to Portland, but there's a little bit of context for this story that I think is pretty important. I was diagnosed with major depression in my mid-20s, but this particular time in my life was hard, not because I was going through one of my cyclical depressions, but because my life had been ruined by Hulk Hogan. How many of you have heard of Gawker Media? Yeah, really f***ed up that you didn't just raise your hand there, Mom. Audience participation. I worked for Gawker Media for a little while. It was a dream job for me. I was hired as a national security correspondent with my mentor, Bill Arkin. And we were hired to do this crazy, beautiful project that nobody else was doing in national security reporting. And for those of you who don't know how hard it is to be a writer, less than 1% of all writers ever become gainfully employed as full-time writers. So when I say that this was my dream job, I really mean it. And I had moved to New York for this job. But before I had taken my job at Gawker, Gawker was sued by Hulk Hogan. They had made a news choice to publish a sex video of Hulk Hogan, which, gross, really gross. But nonetheless, they had been sued. And it later came out that actually this lawsuit had been funded by Peter Thiel, who is the founder of PayPal. So, a vengeful billionaire and a washed-up wrestler ruined my dream job. And I was left, after Gawker declared bankruptcy, I was given a severance check, and I packed up my mom's truck with all of my stuff by myself in New York and left my apartment in Brooklyn and moved home to Vermont. And I spent one winter living at my mentor's really drafty-ass farmhouse in Pomfret, Vermont, with no cell phone service and very shoddy wireless. And I felt really sorry for myself for about 6 months. And then in the spring, I decided that it was time for me to do something different, and I moved to Portland. Which was a wonderful decision, but on this particular night, it was a really hard night. I hadn't yet found a fulfilling job. I didn't have a support network in Portland, so there wasn't anybody that I could really call to say, hey, I'm really struggling right now. So I enacted what I called Plan Z. And this is the kind of end of days plan that you make with your therapist when you're really struggling. And essentially what happened is that I called the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Now, if you're wondering why that sounds so complicated, why I couldn't just say suicide hotline, it's because it's run by a government agency. So they have to have a really bureaucratic name in order for people to take it seriously. The other thing that happens when you call the Suicide Prevention Lifeline is that you don't get to talk to a person right away. You are actually greeted by an automated message. So in an effort to save your own life, when you reach out to talk to another human being who will hopefully convince you that you are worthy of life, you are greeted by a computer, which obviously is pretty demoralizing. The other thing that happens, though, and this is probably because it is run by a government agency, and this makes perfect sense. There are two prompts that actually happen. The first is that if you'd like to speak to someone in Spanish, you can press 2, except obviously they say that in Spanish. And the second thing that they offer is that if you are a veteran, you can also dial a specific number for a separate line. But they don't just say this once. They say this over and over and over again, every 15 seconds. So by the time you've been on the line for 3 minutes waiting to talk to someone, you've heard the repetitive, would you like to speak to someone in Spanish? Press 2. Are you a veteran experiencing PTSD? Press 6. And for me, that created two feelings. One, I felt like a really lazy American because I hadn't learned Spanish. Also, I took 3 years of Spanish in high school, but in my defense, Senora Para was my teacher, would make up words in Spanish when she didn't know them because I lived in Vermont and nobody speaks Spanish in Vermont. So that's really not my fault. I'm just gonna chalk that up to Senora Para. And the other thing is that when you are constantly reminded that there are people who have struggled through literal wars, how dare I call and request for help when people have it so much worse than I do? I was just a girl with a broken dream who'd been brought down by Hulk Hogan. I mean, those are hard comparisons. So the repetitive nature of the option to opt into Spanish, and then also if you are a veteran. But then there's a third thing that happens. There's a clicking noise. It goes. Have you ever been to the dentist's office and seen those teeth that wind up and clack across the floor? That's what it sounds like. So, as a recap, I have called the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline to speak with a human being because I'm thinking about killing myself. I am greeted with shame, with guilt, and then with real serious irritation. And at some point, I never spoke to another person. The feeling that I had of wanting to leave this earth because I was a burden and because I was unworthy was swamped by fury. And so I hung up and I started writing a letter to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline to offer them some advice on rebranding, because that's a shitty name. And also, it's crazy that you don't talk to a human being in the beginning. Now, because I'm a writer, this is a story that I have told before, not in this capacity, but I wrote about it. And I shared it with my loved ones and my friends and the general public. And two things came out of sharing this story, and they were both pretty surprising. One is that I think the expectation when you tell people that you're suffering is that they will view you with compassion and empathy, and maybe you'll get some really, are you okay? But no, people are pissed at you because they are afraid. And that fear turns to fury. And so you are undergoing this experience where you have revealed the most vulnerable thing that you have ever told anyone, and people are pissed at you, which is really disconcerting. But the second thing is even more strange, and I could not have guessed in a million years that this would happen. People started sending me gifts. And when you think about it, the idea that someone is sending you a consolation prize on not killing yourself is pretty weird. And also, like, how do you pick that gift out? Do you, like, walk into a store and be like, you know what, my friend didn't kill herself, and so I'm just wondering, what do I do for that? Like, salt shakers, tablecloth? But in fact, I got so many things that I wrote down a list to share with you tonight of some of my favorites. I got goat's milk caramel, delicious, fantastic. I got a bottle of limited release barrel aged citizen cider, also fantastic. From my dad and his partner Laura, I got a Kokodima moss ball, which, as it turns out, is just a fern wrapped in moss, and they're a bitch to take care of, and I killed it 2 weeks later. I got an adult coloring book, a travel size watercolor set. You know the Minute Maid drops that turn your water into lemonade? Those are gross. Don't send those to someone who's almost killed themselves. I got homemade dog treats for my dog, which I guess is great for my dog, but seems like a weird gift for me. And then my final thing that I got that was actually the best was a gallon of maple syrup. I'm from Vermont, so that's someone who knew me. I think the reason that I am comfortable being up here tonight is not because I tell this story often, but because I'm an external processor, and so every time I tell this story, I get something out of it. So you may have been thinking that this was a night for you, but in fact, this was a night for me. But in the way that it is for you, it is to demystify mental illness and mental health issues. We are at a time in our country and in the world where we are certainly all suffering from mental health issues. And so giving space and being vulnerable and having frank conversations about the things that we go through seems really critical to me right now. My second piece of advice is that if you're thinking about killing yourself, you should start a registry first. Thank you.
Sultana is a writer and activist who lives in South Portland, Maine. She writes for the Portland Phoenix about women's issues and allydom in the Trump era, and she works with Maine youth to support their leadership development. She's currently finishing her first book of essays about mental health, and I think it was wonderful that your mom was here tonight. So one more round of applause for Sultana, please.
Sit tight for more sound bites. Our host asked today's teller some fun questions with answers that you didn't really hear in the story.
Sultana, can you tell me what your connection to Maine is?
Yeah, I 10 years ago moved to Tahoe, and one of my best friends that I met in Tahoe, Jesse Desper, actually is a Maine native. And while I was looking for a new place to live after I left New York, I came to Portland to visit and fell in love. So
you had the choice of New York or Tahoe, and you decided on Maine.
I had already done both of those by the time I made it to Maine, so I was happy to be back in New England, though.
All right, that's great. So how did you get into storytelling?
I'm a writer, and I have been for a long time, but I'm also an organizer and an activist, so storytelling is a pretty critical component of all three of those things.
All right. What is your process as you prepare to tell a story?
Procrastinate, panic, and then like furiously study my crib notes 15 minutes before I show up.
So you are a professional storyteller then. All right. So can you tell us about one part of your story, sort of a behind the scenes detail that you're not going to include in what you're telling tonight?
Yeah. I used to work for Gawker Media. And so part of the story is about the implosion of Gawker Media that led me to this place. And I am not going to talk about Peter Thiel in depth, but it's a fun fact about him. He's a terrible human being. But he's also someone who is currently investing in research that utilizes teenage blood that they then put into older humans' bodies to retain their youthfulness. So the villain in my story is a literal vampire.
Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. Special thanks also to Toad & Co. More information about Soundbites, including how to attend a live storytelling event, is online at soundbitesme.org. And of course, you can always hear more stories at mainpublic.org.